Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is artist and educator Tracy Ziegler. Ziegler graduated from the University of Pennsylvania with a master's in social work before entering the Pennsylvania Academy of Fine Arts to study painting and printmaking. She has been an exhibiting artist for over 20 years. In 2009, Ziegler began exhibiting her work in prisons and created an open window project. In this voluntary project, she donates her artwork to prisons, develops in-prison art workshops, and created a through-the-mail art curriculum for a network of prisoners throughout the U.S. She has also written many illuminating essays about art, prisons, and life, published in the Broad Street Review. And welcome to the show.
Thank you. Nice to see you again.
Yeah. Now, I want to talk about this prison gig that you've been doing. Mm-hmm. You've been exhibiting since 2009. What prompted this foray into the prison world?
Well, I had been exhibiting my art in the gallery world for about 20 years. And I just thought that I wanted to find a new audience. Mm. And what I really wanted to find, it had nothing to do with prisons. It had nothing to do with rehabbing prisoners. I don't believe in rehabbing prisoners. I think rehabbing is something you do with old houses. Mm. It was from my point of view, I wanted to find a new audience. And I wanted to find an audience that had no money and no power, as I came to understand the audience in the gallery world. Mm. You know, that sort of develops a certain amount of conversation. When money's involved and power's involved, you have this conversation. So I wanted to find a different conversation.
So you wanted people with minds that were open and not cluttered by some of the politics of art.
Yes, yes. It's funny. I was just speaking with my son about this because he's doing a film about me and the prisoners and my own work. And I said, I really felt that I went to prison to find creative freedom.
Mm.
That in the gallery world, you have an expectation. And if you have a certain amount of success, you have the expectation to repeat that kind of same success. I have a lot of wonderful, wonderful galleries, but I've had people say to me, you can't do that, you're going to disappoint your audience.
Mm.
And I'm like, well, no, that's not why I'm doing it. If I'm doing that, if I'm doing art for a commodity, I'll just get a job at the mall.
Yeah.
You know, it's not about that. So I decided, and I hadn't thought about prisoners. It could have been homeless people. It could have been the terminally ill. It could have been children, but children come with these things called parents, and you don't want to deal with them. And so somehow or other, but also it was about the space, that I wanted my art to be in a space that didn't absorb my art. So if you go into a gallery, you expect the art to be there.
Oh, yeah, and it's perfect lighting, and it's all set up aesthetically.
And I wanted to find a space that was sort of rejecting of my work. So I wrote this letter to wardens throughout the United States, and I just picked them randomly, like iconic prisons, not iconic prisons. And I asked them, can I have an exhibition in your prison? Now, I am a social worker. I know a certain amount of jargon. I could have said, my art's going to save your prisoners, blah, 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 blah. But I don't believe any of that stuff. You know, I don't think art makes good people out of us, and I don't think art makes bad people out of us. You know, I've been to art school. I know what it makes out of us. And it doesn't necessarily make good people out of us. So I didn't say any of that jargon. I merely said, can I have an art show? And surprise, surprise, I got mostly rejections. And I'm like, oh, my God, I'm rejected by a prison.
Did you get reasons for the rejections?
Or
did
they just give you form letters? Well, I got my first letter, which was very, very chilling. And I thought, wow, if I got all my letters like this, it would be, like, so amazing. And it was from a Supermax in Florida.
Mm.
And the warden said that not only was his heinous inmates not going to see my artwork, they were basic, and he didn't really say this, but I interpreted, they were not going to see the light of day.
Oh.
And it was so chilling. And I thought, oh, that's your artist's interpretation, thinking that they didn't see the light of day. But since then, I've had this program where I have a through-the-mail art curriculum, and a lot of people in that project are in solitary confinement.
I do want to talk about that, but tell us how. So you got into the prisons, and you started doing a lot of work in prisons.
If you show up at prison with a truckload of art, which I did, and I did that in New England, someone in the place is going to say, "Oh, do you want to do a workshop?" So I decided, because I wanted a conversation, and I wanted a conversation that was, authentic. I didn't want, if you ask somebody, if I ask a prisoner, what do you think about my artwork? I was like, oh, yeah, I love it, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So I wanted a more natural environment, so I started doing the workshops.
Tell us how the open window project, it encompasses all of this, right?
Right, right.
Going in and teaching and showing your work. Well, what kind of a reception did you get from the prisoners at first?
Well, people love volunteers coming into the prison. In fact, they will say, if it wasn't for the volunteers, we would go insane. So, you come in with anything, any kind of baggage, whatever, and they're going to love it. I have a different philosophy of art than most prisoners. And so that has always been this kind of like a weird kind of awakening or something for them to see that, I'm not really impressed with your drawings copying out of Playboy magazine. That's something else. Call it your time of the month or something, but it's not art, or your cute puppy dog pictures, save them for your therapist. It's not for me.
Uh-huh.
So
uh-huh.
A lot of that conversation.
That is really interesting to me. Now, you mentioned that you were a social worker, has this been a way for you to bring both disciplines together, social work and art? I mean, it seems like such a strange...
No, it wasn't purposeful. It was totally... When I left social work, I just closed the door and was not going to look back, just because I didn't really like the institutionalization of people in terms of how you help people. I think that listening is something that you see in therapy, but it should not be institutionalized in therapy. Listening is an element of all that everybody has in order to embrace somebody. So these things that were sort of marketed as a career is like, that's how you should live your life. Like, let's get warm with it,
Yeah, yeah. So you don't like being boxed in, but it seems so strange that you would go to prisons to find your freedom.
I know.
Well, talk to us about that, because, somebody in prison might think that's kind of a smarty pants thing to say.
I mean, have I ever said that to them, that I come in here because I find it's a certain amount? Well, the reality is that there's a strict, what I've learned, my imagination is that it would be free for me to go into prison and show my work, because who cares what I do in there?
You won't get the judgment or the reviews.
I won't get the judgment, but I do get a lot of judgment.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Like, I have Billy who says, I just hate your work. It makes me so sad. And I had another person who said, and now I had this one prison where the work is throughout the entire prison. I gave 50 paintings to this prison. These are big, like 5 feet by 6 feet paintings. There's no hiding them. There's no like putting them away. And I had this one guy, and I didn't meet him in that prison, but I met him at a Supermax where he was transferred to. He says, oh, you're the artist. He said, when I first heard about your artwork, he said, I wasn't really sure I wanted to wake up every day looking at your artwork. But then he said, every time I looked at it, I saw something different. And I didn't want to point out to him, listen, you're a guy who's doing life here. Don't you think it's a cool thing to see something different each day rather than the same old cinder blocks? But I didn't say that,
But art is also a way for them to transform themselves in some way in regard to it does change when you look at a painting.
It is.
And it can change your heart, and you can, and it can move around your emotions.
Well, what I said to one program director, I said, because a lot of, where I've had the artwork, there's been a lot of controversy with the the guards. Who should be politically correct? You're supposed to be a correction officer, but let's say guards. So with the guards, and they just really get angry. I have this group of paintings out at a Midwest prison, And I walked into the prison gym, and I said, wow, this is better than the Guggenheim. Can I have a show here? And the program director was like, wow, that would be fun. And so I brought all my paintings in, and there were these armored horses. So I thought it was fitting for a gym, these armored horses, and, you know, the guys playing, you know, the buff guy playing horses and stuff. And the guards were so furious. They were so furious. They were running to the warden saying that the inmate was going to get hurt with my paintings. They were going to knock into my paintings and get themselves hurt. And the warden, who was very savvy, said, when did you start worrying about whether the inmate was going to get hurt?
Yeah. And the only thing that could hurt them probably would be their emotions.
Yeah, right.
Because they're trapped in there. Now, I think it's really interesting that your art by mail curriculum that you've created, it deals mainly with people in solitary confinement. To talk to us about what that means.
It's also what happens in prisons itself. Because if you go into prison and you're getting out in 5 years... you have a laundry list of things that you have to do. You have to take anger management. You have to take drug rehab, whatever. So you don't really have time. Art is not on that laundry list.
Right.
You don't. So most of my classes in prison are lifers. You know, the ones who could care less about whether they rehabbed or not. They just want to do art. And so I even, in fact, had classes that were developed for the lifers. And so I think the same thing happens with Through the Mail, is that the people who are doing art often are the people who are not so busy with getting their GED and that kind of stuff. So it's just automatic that. And then there's programs that you can do in prison, but there's not so many programs that you can do if you're in solitary. If you're in solitary, you don't get to do the prison programs. And so I think that's why I have a lot.
Has this awakened something in you in regard to being an artist? Because so many artists that I talk to and know are seeking solitude, right? And you're working with people who are just thrown into solitary.
Yeah.
How has that dichotomy changed you in some ways?
That's what Jack and I were talking about, too, is that I choose solitary. Because I have a studio in the woods, you know, surrounded by trees. They could very well be bars. And, you know, here's this other person working in a prison. But, you know, what I choose, me choosing solitary is very, very different than having solitary forced upon you. I can go, you know, so it's not the same thing.
Do the prisoners ever talk to you about that?
No, but I had one prisoner who was in my class. He participated in the program. And I got letters from him for about a year and a half, 2 years. And the first letter I got, I could tell there was a certain amount of depression. And this guy is 37. He has been in solitary for 7 years.
Oh, that's unbelievable.
He was incarcerated at 17. The letters were, I don't want to waste your time. My work is inferior. And I just spent time saying, no, you know, I don't care if, you know, I'm not interested in perfect rendering. I'm just interested in seeing your visual dialogue that you have with the space around you, with your world. And he started to drawing, but after 2 years ago, he hung himself.
You wrote about him in one of your essays,
Yeah, and I mean, I don't ever really place myself into what it's like to be in a room this size in the studio without the window looking out, what you do for 23 hours a day. You go one day out by yourself. So that letter, you know, what I was saying, you don't see the light of day. I've gotten so many letters from people in solitary. I have a lot of people in Pelican Bay in California, and it's like at the end, P.S., you know, when you go out today, look at the sky for me because I haven't seen it for 20 years or something like that.
God, I know, it seems inhumane to me. That's not no way to rehabilitate anybody, regardless of what your intentions are, you know.
Yeah, no.
Lack of humanity.
I don't think rehab is what they're about.
No, it's not. It's not. they might as well be honest about it. I want to talk to you a little bit about some of your essays. I was particularly taken by your essay called Words Without Borders, Art Without Why. Mm-hmm. And you make a statement, artists' statements tell me that art is moving into words and academia for validation. Talk to us about that. That's very interesting to me.
Well, I think it's funny because I was in Mexico last week and I met some artists and they were saying the art schools in Mexico is all about conceptual art. So you don't really have have to do the art itself. I mean, I don't haven't been to an MFA program, so I really don't know. But it's all of this, like, you can have a conceptual basis for doing the art, which is so totally different than when I went to art school 20 years ago, which was about materials, which was getting your fingernails dirty, which was an aesthetic kind of interpretation of the world. Not an aesthetic interpretation meaning frou-frou or beauty blow, but a sensual feeling, a sensual connection, and the materials were vital to that. Now it feels like the craft of art is going out the window. And so it becomes like you might as well just be a philosopher or something.
If you're just joining us, my guest is artist Tracy Ziegler. We're talking about some of her work in prisons and some of her essays that she's been writing about art and life. Do you think the art world that you came into as a young woman who was just starting in art was more about artists finding their voices and finding their strengths and their talents?
I think so. I think that it was about making art, being in your studio, making art, creating a dialogue with your materials, a dialogue with the world. And it's not even self-expression. That's one of the things that I have to say all the time to the students in prison. You know, nobody really cares whether I loved my mother and didn't love my mother. You know, who cares? I don't care. You know, it's not that. It's a dialogue. It cannot be about me. It has to be beyond me.
And it's immediate, too, isn't it? I mean,
yes,
we're not
yes.
talking about the past when you're creating a piece of art necessarily.
Well, you are in a way. I mean, it comes in, but it's all about process. It's all about the process. And it's not the process of jargon. It's not the process of theory. It's actual process. I mean, you know, people do, like, process art in museums now, which, you know, you do installations and stuff like that, which I always thought, well, do you think a piece of artwork on a pedestal is less process than an installation? Because life is all about process. Mm-hmm. There's nothing in our world that isn't about process. So if you're saying my art is about process, well, show me the art that's not about process, and I would find that really pretty fascinating because I don't think you can find it.
Yeah.
You know, life is process. That thing on that static sculpture on the pedestal is as much process as creating an interactional, exhibition.
So you must bemoan what's happening in the art world, though. I mean, honestly, it is about money.
Oh, my God.
The constant talk is not even about artists and work. It's about how much a Picasso sold for, and it's a record.
Well, it's true that is what happens at the upper echelons. In my echelon, like where I'll never be really famous or anything, it's cool. I mean, I'm still doing the artwork because I'm doing the artwork. What I say to my son, you don't want to become too famous because you become too famous, you lose yourself. So you just want to stay under the radar. And, you know, Gary and I are free to do what we want to do. We've been free to do what we wanted to do for the last 20 years. If you don't like what my stuff is, I just go somewhere else.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't have any great fame or anything like that.
Yeah, and I bet the expectation for very famous artists is, I mean, they can do anything.
Yeah.
They don't even have to work, really. I mean, they can put their signature on a piece of cardboard where they doodled something and make millions.
If you're about making money, I wouldn't go into the art world. I'd go into the stock market world or something like that. Don't go into art. I mean, that's like really dumb.
Let's talk about your essay, too, called Animals in Our Unlikeness. I thought that was a fascinating one, too. And you surprised me with something that you said in that. You said, like anything else in art or life, the artist rarely chooses his or her subject. And I found that, what?
Yeah.
You mean it just comes to you? I mean, that's what a lot of poets say, that
yeah.
I'm just driving along and suddenly there's this amazing cloud of beauty.
You get pulled to it. You get, you know, you don't have control over what you like. You know, I go into a gallery and I don't say, well, I think today I'm going to like Del Sarto. And then go in, I get pulled to whoever is going to pull me to that picture.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the same thing with art. I mean, you can start out with a medium. You can choose a medium, but if it's not right, you're not going to stay there. I mean, I think there's very little that we actually do choose. You know, you choose a college.
So it's like falling in love, right?
It's falling, yeah. That's you fall in love, and if someone used to say, if it fell on, you know, crap. That's what you're going to fall in love with.
Well, your art is so beautiful. You know how much I love your landscapes and some of your renderings of emotion, which it feels like to me. Where does that come from then? I mean, you seem to be choosing some of the same places in many ways.
I do.
With different shadows, different light, and obviously different settings. But it's almost you go to the same place in some ways.
You mean I'm redundant?
No, not at all. Because it's a beautiful place of many different emotions. I can see that.
I'm really like,
but you have a style, I
yes,
suppose.
Yes, yes. Well, I'm really. I mean, I think if you think what is the engine of one's art, I would say that the beautiful is the engine of my art. I mean, that's what I look at. That's what I look at: harmony. I look at color. I look at nuances. Look at light and shadow. I mean, even though I do this prison project, I would never, ever do an art project which just says, you know, let's free all the prisoners and call it my art. That, to me, is offensive.
Yeah.
You know, that is an advertisement. That's propaganda. I'm not into, even though I might support that.
Yeah.
I would not bring that into my artwork. I allow whatever those kind of feelings that would take me to prison come into my artwork in another way.
Uh-huh. You seem to be in touch with sadness in your artwork, but of course that's my interpretation, because I think it's really beautiful stuff, and
it
makes me melancholy, and it brings up sadness that is this kind of pleasurable,
mm-hmm,
because it brings up memories from the past that one cannot really put their finger on.
Yeah, well, probably like a certain amount of desire, like the piece that you picked for. Am I allowed to talk about
oh,
that?
Oh, sure, yeah. The listeners must know that Tracy provided the painting on the cover of my latest collection of poetry.
And the reach. So it was about desire, you know, a reach that you never, you know, going across the water.
You never end up there.
You never end up there, right, yeah. Right. And that there's something that you never quite have a solid kind of point that you can say this is it. It's always this constant moving on and moving on and moving on, which I find really interesting.
And that's what you find in your art, too. I mean, you seem to never run out of ideas on some of these themes. How do you feel when you're painting?
Sometimes I feel really frustrated and annoyed. I mean, it's a lot of working with all these materials. Like yesterday, I was like, could not pick up a paintbrush without getting it all over me. I'm like, oh, this is so ridiculous. I hate this. But I probably was getting a cold. I actually have to, and what I've been doing is that I move from medium to medium. So this past year, I've been doing a lot of sculpture.
Oh, really?
And I don't know if anyone likes my sculpture, but it doesn't matter because it's an exploration for me. And what I was finding is that I spend, the basis of all my work is drawing. And so I draw. So Gary and I go to Italy or someplace for a month, and we spend 10 hours a day drawing in the museums. It's almost like, you know, they shoot horses, don't they? It was like, who's going to stand?
Marathon.
Yeah, marathon. Am I going to draw a lot? And so that's the basis. And what I found is that after you draw for so many years so hard, your hand wants to go into the paper because you feel form, you feel light and shadow. So I had to start doing sculpture because my hand was, you know, was blocked by the paper, by the two dimensions. I had to go into the third dimension.
God, that's really interesting. I understand that too, because sometimes I just physically want to pick up a pen and write.
Yes.
And then
yes,
put piece,
yes.
little yes, lines on the yes, paper. I have
yes,
to
yes,
physically
so,
do it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. You sent me your latest essay called "An Intruder in the Studio."
No.
Talk to us about that. I thought it was very interesting.
Well, what made me write that? I keep on...
You invited somebody into your studio and all they noticed was a chair.
Oh, and that was years ago. It's funny, when I sent that essay to my son, who's doing this film, he says, oh, I thought it was about me, because he's come into my studio to film me and I find out it's all about him. And, you know, and I'm like, he wants me to do this. I'm like, well, I'm not doing printmaking right now, but I want you to do printmaking, you know, that kind of stuff. So I don't know if it's from that, but it's just this idea that how do you look at... And the essay is directed at me, too. You know, when I was in Mexico, I felt like saying, oh, this reminds me of... And I thought, am I really looking at this piece in and of itself without what it reminded me of? And so the whole process of looking at art is, can you experience the art without finding the familiar? And I was talking to someone about this essay, and they said, well, common ground is a good thing. And I said, well, yeah, common ground is a good thing, but sometimes common ground is not there.
And it keeps you from the yes. essence of
yes,
something.
Yes. It yeah. does keep you. It keeps you from stopping who you are and listening to the other person.
Uh-huh. And seeing something
that
without
other, that
being
other
self-conscious
or
about
other,
yourself looking
exactly,
at it.
Yeah. Exactly.
No, and that's why I thought it was a very interesting mm-hmm, essay. Mm-hmm. Did the person who came in and just noticed the chair because she had a chair just like it ever read the essay and go,
no,
what do
no,
you mean?
No, unfortunately, she died a couple years ago. So, but I just wrote the essay last week, so.
Yeah, I thought it was, your essays are really illuminating.
Oh,
I find them really
you.
Very interesting. Let's go back to the one about animals. You said you like to draw animals to experience their unknown otherness.
Again, that goes with the essay
exactly.
about this.
It's
uh-huh. about how do you experience an animal without reducing that animal to you as a person? How do you not anthropomorphize that animal? Can you experience that animal? And I do a lot of drawing at the zoo, and I just see a ton of people like teaching their child not how to listen to the animal, not how to engage in it. They teach them facts. This, da, da, da. It's like, the kid doesn't care about facts. The kid, you know, and how do you experience an animal for what it is outside of facts?
Mm-hmm.
And drawing an animal is a really wonderful way of doing that because they're not threatened by you. You don't have this thing over your face called a camera. And I found a lot of the animals just come up to the window. And so I had this gorilla who posed for me for like a half hour. And when I closed my book, he walked away. He was curious. He was not threatened by me. It's yeah. just really fascinating.
So it's a fascinating relationship with
mm-hmm,
animals
mm-hmm.
and to be able to draw them without putting yourself into it.
Yeah.
Or the fact that the zebra, blah, 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 you know.
Yes, making a story about that it may whatever be this, that, or the other. But just accepting. And that's why I like drawing, like, when you travel to draw. You draw. And I guess one of the things that started me with really drawing a lot was about 2 years ago, I went to the Yucatan and I forgot my camera. So I started to draw. And I should have done it because I'm an artist. But what I realized is that I am that now vulnerable. It's not me looking at the landscape and the people from behind this camera, but that rather I become this vulnerable thing who becomes the object of scrutiny.
Yeah.
And so it's less, you know, it's this dialogue. And I'm exposed.
Then you become
exposed.
More an intimate part of the landscape,
yeah,
for sure.
Right.
Tracy, we are almost out of time. Can you tell us just in a few words how working in the prisons might have changed you in some ways as an artist or deepened your experience?
Well, it's given me a certain amount of courage, I think, just because you make a decision to do something and you realize what you sort of destined, being in the gallery, being this, doing these shows. They don't really matter that much. Like, who cares, you know? And so there's this really powerful relationship that you have, a commitment that's bigger than yourself. And then I think also because I had to explore, if I was disagreeing with big bosom women kind of drawing, why do I disagree with that? And why would I ever say that that's not art? You know, and have to explore those issues and then explore them and explain them in a way that is not confrontational and that is in a language that everybody can use. Well, if you talk to prisoners who never had a high school degree and you explain a philosophical concept and you do it fairly well so that they understand it, you can explain it to anybody.
Yeah. Tracy Ziegler, we're almost out of time. Do you have any contact information you can give people if they want to get in touch?
Well, Prisoners Express is part of what, an open window, which is my section of the project, which is the art project, is part of Prisoner Express, and that's at Cornell in the Center for Transformative Action.
Great.
Thank you,
Tracy Ziegler, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Ever fascinating.
Great.
Keep up the great painting.
Thank you.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega, and we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.